morning and welcome to Manzanita Voices. This is Linda Field. I'm your host, and I'm really happy to have you back with us after the holidays. First of all, I'm really happy to announce that we have closed our contest for wine, cheese, and chocolate. We've received a lot of entries in poetry and prose from people out there, and we have a lot of things to wade through now in the next 2 or 3 months. So we'll be announcing the winner probably in early March. We'll let you know more about that later, but I did want you to know that the wine, cheese, and chocolate contest has closed, at least for the written part. But if you're an artist, guess what? You still have some time, because we didn't get very many entries. We need to have a fair contest. We need to have more photographs, more sketches, more paintings, anything artistic that you want to do on a wine, cheese, or chocolate theme would be most appreciated, and we're giving you to the end of January to send it in. For information on how to do that, if you don't already have it, it seems like we've inundated you with it over the past year, but you can find out information about it on the Manzanita Press website, which you can link to from my website. I want you to go to my website, folks. It's manzamedia.com, manzamedia.com. Go there and you'll see the link to the Manzanita Writers Press website. You will see my blog, which still, I think, has a picture of my Christmas tree on there in case you haven't seen my very unusual Christmas tree. And also, archive shows. There are at least 12 there now. Really good shows from very interesting guests. I'd love to have you listen if you've missed any of these, hearing them when we broadcast. So go to manzamedia.com for all that information. And be sure, if you're an artist or a photographer, send us an entry. You have until January 31st to get it in. There's a $10 fee to submit 2 drawings or photographs. You can mix and match whatever you want to do. Now it's time for the morning workout. And I have a couple poems submitted to me from friends of ours, actually, people who have had their work appear in Wild Edges and other Manzanita anthologies that we've published over the years. The first one I'm going to read is by Jackie Rogers, and it's called Yoga Tree Pose. Limbs ascended. I am black oak stretching in the sun. Soft breeze quiets fleeting thoughts that scurry into mind and leaves before I notice. Bristled hair lets loose to feather down a curlicue pattern, becoming compost or nesting material for soft baby sparrows. Standing live and grounded to these mountains, I breathe in my home soil, release my inner tensions into mulch. Jackie Rogers, Yoga Tree Pose. Are you more relaxed now? I know I am. Okay, this next one is by another friend, Ron Pickup, who is a wonderful photographer. He is a great champion of our rivers here in California. And he has written a poem called The Tuolumne. Now, I'm going to do a little bit of a thing. I'd like to hear from you, have you send me an email. If you can identify a poetic device that Ron is using in this poem, what technique is it that he's using, and why do you think he used it, and how does it make the poem effective? Again, you can send that response to me at Linda@manzamedia.com. Come on, I want to hear from you. Okay, So listen for the poetic device, the technique that he's using in the Tuolumne. The silver sheen of currents under morning sun sings this sense of place, sings the symbiotic flow this wild river so richly serves. The golden eagles spiral into high space, their prey a checkered snake dangling long but firm in sharp talons. The quick slip of an otter into his fluid world. That's the Tuolumne by Ron Pickup. What poetic device did he use? What technique was repeated throughout that poem that made it so effective? Okay, well, now we've taken care of all that, and it's time to get to know our guest for today. And I'm very pleased to welcome her. Her name is Danella Kimura, and she lives in Columbia, which is the it's a town, it's an old gold rush town. It's so neat there. I was there at Christmas time, and I actually got to ride shotgun on a stagecoach, and I was so thrilled. There were lots of horses. They had a horse parade that day, and Danella lives there. What a wonderful place. It's a state park and a town all in one. Welcome, Danella.
Hi, Linda.
I'm happy to have you with us.
Thank you.
Now, Danella, I met Danella when she attended one of our events, one of our Manzanita Writers Press events this past year at the Murray Creek Kitchen in San Andreas. And she came and read a poem there, and we were talking a little bit, and I've been getting to know her more since then. And this is one fascinating woman. She is, for one thing, she's very organized, and she's very creative, and she's very knowledgeable. So we have a lot to talk about today.
Well, thank you.
Danella, how did you, you're a writer, among many other things, writer, teacher, everything, but how did you get started in your writing?
Well, I first started writing when I was about the fourth grade, and I wanted to get letters. And I asked my grandmother, how do you get letters? And she said, well, you write them. And I said, if I write the letter, will you answer me? Yes! That's a grandmother's dream, by the way. And so I started writing letters. And by the time I was in the eighth grade or high school, she was beginning to send my letters to my great aunt Ethel, who's a well-known writer and author.
Yeah.
And she was... wrote back to my grandmother and gave her a prophecy to pass on to me. And that was that Danella will always write. She may get married, have children, and teach, but she will always write. And that has proven true. All my life I've been writing, even though I taught and raised kids and had a family and everything.
So now, where were you living when you wrote these letters to your grandmother?
I was living in Yuba City. I grew up in Yuba City.
Oh.
A small town in where, you know, peaches are there, with a major crop back then. Lots of the town was, at certain times of year, you could smell the peach fuzz. And the aroma of, it almost smelled like stewed peaches when the peaches were ripe. And it covered
gosh.
The whole area. It was a wonderful scent.
Mm.
And, of course, some of those orchards are gone now, but we had, it was a beautiful town.
How wonderful.
Very small then.
Yes, very small then, because it's not that huge now.
Yeah.
It's still a nice small town.
It is.
Yeah. So you were living in Yuba City, and your grandmother was living in...
San Rafael. But she would bring Great Aunt Ethel to live with us. Or to visit us, rather. And she would, you know, stay a little while, and then they all go home. But one of the things Great Aunt Ethel brought with her was her typewriter and a book that she was working on in Spanish called, which was Barbarous Mexico, is the History of Mexico. And that's why she is well known in Mexico as well as she was in the United States in the 30s. Back in the 30s, she wrote some of her books. One was made into a movie. So when Aunt Ethel comes, she was kind of a celebrity.
Wait a minute. Let me stop you there. One of her books was made into a movie? What movie?
It was called One Way Ticket.
Oh.
And it was about my grandmother's family's from San Quentin Village. It's a town next to the prison of San Quentin.
Uh-huh.
And a lot of the family members worked as guards, and so there's a family history there. And the One Way Ticket is about someone who was sent to prison and a girl who lived in the town who fell in love with him. So
oh.
It's sort of a... anyway, when she got there, her typewriter was just fascinating to me. And so, I had to write a poem about it because it was just my first experience with a typewriter.
Uh-huh.
And, you know, every kid has that first surprise that opens their eyes to what they can do.
Yeah.
And so, do you want to hear the...
Oh, yeah, I'd love to hear it.
Okay, this is Great Aunt Ethel's typewriter. The ancient Underwood graced the white tablecloth like a fat black spider. A white paper rolled in, stared back at me. No words hid it under its keys. No stories. Index finger pressed a round key. D. No word, just a letter came. I poked another key and it clicked. E. The noise alerted Mom. Don't touch that! My fingers pulled back as if they touched fire. A more thoughtful voice said, leave her alone. She can't hurt it. And I was alone again, facing every writer's dread, joy, nightmare, passion, that expectant gift to write, to fill the void, to defeat a negative with words. The letters continued until I wrote my name. And that was enough.
That's great. Oh, my goodness. So you picked out those letters. Tell me, did you ever learn to type the correct way?
Oh, yes. When
ASDF.
I was in high school, my senior year in high school,
yeah.
Learned the proper method. But because I had played the piano, I already knew how to pluck the keys down.
Oh,
straight.
Yeah, sure,
so
yeah.
That gave some background.
Did those two things, the playing piano and learning typewriter, were they confusing at all?
Well,
did they interfere with each other?
When I was in the eighth grade, I took a music scoring class to learn how to write music.
Uh-huh.
And basically, poetry and music both have rhythm.
Yes.
And as you know, one of the two largest industries in America that survive exclusively on poetry is music, the other one being greeting cards. And so music itself is a great way to feel the rhythm of poems.
Oh, yes,
yeah.
Definitely. Yeah, it sure is. But I was wondering if learning the ASDFJKL semi for typing,
yeah,
did that interfere with your learning of your playing chords on the piano?
Oh,
or
no,
didn't
no,
they?
No,
they
no.
Didn't
it's
bother
just,
each other?
It's just the motion of the fingers were the same.
Yeah, your fingers are well trained.
Yeah, but I learned to type and gradually got better at it. My first job was as a typist. And years later, when I graduated from college, and I was actually working as a typist, and my first employer heard about it and looked at me and said, "Donella, you type?" So you know how bad I was at start.
Oh my!
We do learn something, so we
yeah, we do. That's funny. Well, okay. So you were writing poetry, and what is the first poem you ever read wrote? Do you happen to know what it is?
I don't know the poem specifically, but I do know what it was about.
Okay.
I was in the eighth grade. We had an assignment from our teacher, first poetry assignment ever for me, to write an answer to Nancy Hanks. There's a poem called Nancy Hanks about her son, Abe Lincoln. And she asked the questions, "Did you know my son? How tall did he grow?"
Oh, because she died when he was a teenager, right?
Teenager.
She died of a fever, I think.
Right.
Yeah.
And the poem asks the questions, "Did you know my son?"
Oh.
And, of course, I said, "Yes, Nancy Hanks, we knew your son." You know, he lived in the hearts of everyone, and goes on and on.
How wonderful!
Yeah, that was so. That was my first poem.
Gee.
Yeah.
That's really nice. That's really nice. I wish you don't have it with you, do you?
Oh no.
No. Long gone.
Long gone. Well, I have it hidden somewhere, but it's at home somewhere.
I see. Yeah. Well. That's nice that you can remember it, at least. It sounds like it was probably a pretty nice poem. I always thought the story of Abe Lincoln losing his mother at an early age was kind of sad.
Yeah.
Well, hey, we'll be back in just a couple minutes with some more with Danella Kimura. So please stay tuned. Welcome back to Manzanita Voices. This is Linda Field, and we're talking today with Danella Kimura, writer, mostly poet, but not only. You're going to hear about other things that she has done. But Danella, you've had quite a few things published. How did you first get published?
Well, sometimes publishing comes out of what you do. And I was, at the time, superintendent of a little Sunday school class of grades 1 to 6, and we took the class to a nursing home at Christmas time to sing Christmas songs to the seniors.
Huh.
And I noticed how the eyes lit up and how the whole room changed. The tension and just rose, the tension just went away. And the nurses, you know, were not hiding their faces anymore. And the eyes of the seniors just lit up. Mm-hmm. And it was just such a moving moment that I got the kids back to the church. I got back in the car and the poem started coming through my head. And I was driving. And I was trying to memorize the poem as I was driving because it was 20 minutes before I got home. And I ran into the house, sat down, and wrote out as fast as I could. Because, you just have to capture the moment.
Yeah.
And sometimes you may have to get off the road. I don't recommend it writing while you're driving.
No.
But that's how the first one was. I sent it into the Independent Journal at the time. Santa Fe had a Poets Corner, and I thought, oh, this is great for Christmas. They'll just want this for Christmas. And you know, editors have their own minds. And so I waited, and I thought, oh, well, Christmas passed. I guess they're not going to want this one. And I forgot about it until somebody called me and said, Danella, you know your poem's in the newspaper? It was Mother's Day Eve. The night before Mother's Day.
Oh.
And it was the perfect poem for Mother's Day. So, you see, it's what you do that the poetry can come out of. That's one of the ways to get published, is just send it into whatever local papers offer poetry. Sometimes it could be a tabloid, like they have. Michael Swift is the editor of Mom and Pop magazines in Sacramento. Actually, it's tabloids that he publishes. And
Michael Swift
is the editor of tabloids magazines. They're just like newspapers, okay? But he publishes poetry, and I can't tell you the name of the poetry's tabloids that he's publishing right now because he changed the name frequently. So I have when I was in Sacramento, when things happened, I would just send things in to Michael Swift, and nearly always, or not always, but most always, the poem went into the next issue.
Huh.
I wrote one about O.J. Simpson, and
it
went into the next issue. Got published actually in two different issues.
Was this after the murders, or was this before?
It was after the white car slow chase. On
oh, that famous, notorious chase.
Yeah.
Yes, yes.
And
oh.
Then I also, after the fires that were burning in Los Angeles, I wrote a poem about that, and that was sent it into the local tabloid guy. Michael Swift was a great guy, and it all went into the next issue because it was about Los Angeles burning, and it really did have, I think, an effect on the community.
Yeah. Oh.
So sometimes it's what's happening now. I wrote a poem for my church Easter Sunday church service, It was about the road to Emmaus. It was there was a line in the scripture that says, "Didn't our hearts burn?"
Oh.
So I titled the poem "Burning Hearts" about this walk in the on the road to Emmaus and how Jesus revealed Himself. And it said, "Didn't our hearts burn?" And he, as He revealed the, this whole moment to us, the next Sunday, I read that poem at a Sacramento local reading, and there was a famous, a well-known San Francisco poet that was reading at the time, and some, you know, when you sign up for an open reading, you don't know who you're going to follow, and who's going to read, you know, after you. And
all right,
so,
yeah.
I signed up, and the reader ahead of me read a poem about David Koresh.
Oh,
and
my.
The last line of that poem was, "Jesus Christ with an M16. And I, yeah, and I, my name was called next. And I thought, well, here was this poem I'd just written the previous Sunday. And I got up and said, the only possible kind of poem that could follow the magnificent one you just heard is one about the real Jesus. And I read Burning Hearts.
Oh, wow.
The next day, the compound burned.
Oh, my goodness.
It was prophetic.
Oh, my gosh.
And it, so when it comes out of where your passion is, what you're doing, the things that are important.
Things that you see
life.
On the news, what's going on right now.
What's going on. Sacramento poets were really very political. A lot of the readings were very political.
Well, it's a state capital.
Yeah. So getting published, sometimes you have to go locally. Sometimes you have to go to the local newspaper.
Uh-huh.
Sometimes when you want to get published, it might be an event like a eggplant festival in Loomis. You want to hear about that?
Yes, I do. This is a great idea. Come on, folks. Well, those of you who are listening to this, if you're kind of frustrated that you haven't gotten your work out there for other people to read and be aware of, Donella is full of ideas about how you can go about that.
Well, sometimes you have to make your moment. And the Eggplant Festival of Loomis is one of those moments. The first one was going to happen, and the only reason that Loomis was able to get an eggplant festival is because when they applied for a fruit or vegetable that they could represent in their town, well, all the other ones were taken. Eggplant was all that was left. So the whole thing was tongue-in-cheek. And I called up Judy Wilson, who is the editor of Folsom Journal, and I said, "What you need for this eggplant festival is a poem about eggplants." And she said, "Yeah, why don't you write one?" That's why I wrote two. And also I was the taster of a judge for all the eggplant dishes. And believe me, I find that really difficult. Harder than writing the poem, actually.
You mean eating all that eggplant in one day?
And so there was an opportunity when they had a little stage there for me to come up and read my poem, because it was published in the Eggplant Festival cookbook. And from then on, every year, it was included in the Eggplant Festival cookbook.
Oh, so you get republished every year.
I got republished. Yeah,
fabulous.
And in fact, others got published along the way, too. So I think there's quite a collection now of eggplant poems. But this is called Eggplant Fricassee.
See what you started?
Yeah, I know what I started. So this is my eggplant fricassee poem.
Okay.
No master chef cooks eggplant more ways than I have tried, nor deftly seasoned each new dish with more creative pride. Though broiled, boiled, baked, or flaked, stewed, brewed, or barbecued, roasted, toasted, coddled, or bottled, sautéed, braised, or fricasseed, this lowly ovoid purple herb defies every cooking verb. Though marinated, spiced, or basted, it's the blandest food I ever tasted.
I love it. That's great.
So the opportunity, sometimes you can make the opportunity. Call up your local newspaper and say, you know, do you need a poem for this event? And sure enough, the opportunity can come around. I was writing, substituting for the pastors, writing little devotionals for the for their pastor's column for different, in the Folsom Journal. And one time they didn't have another idea, and I sent them a poem that was seasonal, and it was also, it was called Desert, Desert Song. And it was something that I had written. It was based on the scripture. So it fit into the Pastor's Corner idea, and she published it. And the poem was a poem that really helped a woman who had been tricked into forging her husband's signature and then sent to prison for a month. And she was, you know, she said that poem saved her life.
Oh, my
goodness. Because I met her afterwards. And, you know, I just have to say, you know, God can use poems no matter what kind of poem you have. It can always be something that will help somebody.
Uh-huh.
And you just have to be faithful and keep writing. And, you know, as the moments come.
And you might get some divine inspiration there.
That's right.
That's right.
That's right.
That's right.
So, yeah, that's so getting published is something you have to work at. Getting published in magazines and things are also what I've done in the past. And the poems that I got published in a teen magazine that won't take poetry anymore because they, you know, they just limit it to kids now. But was based on when my son ran in a track meet. He was a 200-meter runner guy. And I wrote about his event, and it got published in their Mother's Day issue. And would you like, do you have time to
Yeah, sure.
For the 200-meter run? Okay, this is preparing for the 200-meter run, in position, warming up, your thick, rich hair identified you. Observing other runners' heats on the track with watchful eyes, you set your mind to run your only entry. Placing feet in first lane struts, arms hung loosely, leaning tilt, you poise to hear the gun release restraints. Pumping elbows, churning thighs, head pressed forward, sucking air, your locomotive charged to win the prize. When the ribbon broke against your chest, you can say you ran amongst the best and heard above the shouts within the crowd the cheering of the mother you made proud.
Oh, that's wonderful. And, you know, I think you see a poem in just about every circumstance, and that's really great because they are there.
They
you
are
just
there.
Have to look. You have
yes.
to look. Okay, we'll be back in just a few minutes. Stay tuned. Welcome back to Manzanita Voices. We're talking today with Danella Kimura and enjoying a lot of her poetry, and we're going to be hearing more from her about lots of stuff in this next segment. We were talking before, though, before the break, about how she, Danella, was writing for various events, and it just occurred to me that if you want to get published and you also want to help your favorite organization at the same time, if you're like me, maybe you're an animal lover, well, why not write a poem about the SPCA or maybe the Grace Foundation outside of Sacramento where they rescue horses, or other, any kind, maybe the Cancer Society, whatever. Write a poem about your heartfelt organization that you love, write about the work that they do, and donate it to them so that they can use it in their publications. You'll be helping them, and you'll be helping yourself too. So anyway, Danella, back to you.
Hello again.
Yes. Now, what about the conference? You've attended a lot of conferences. We've been talking in between the segments here, and a lot of writers' conferences helped get you started.
Right. I started attending the first Mount Hermon Christian Writers Conference in 1981. And at that time, Tim Chown was the poetry editor that was looking for materials for Wellspring Magazine. And I was able to contact with him. I have an interview with him. And I sat down, and I had 75 poems all in a brochure. And he flipped through them really fast, and he said, "That one." And I just, surprise, surprise. And so I looked at the poem. Was about a poem that I wrote about my father, and he liked the imagery that was in the poem.
Hmm.
And so I fixed it up, sent it to him, and he sent it back. And I thought, what is this about? And he said, "Well, I want you to rewrite the last bit of it to strengthen it and fit the imagery a little better."
Oh.
And okay.
So they'll do that sometimes, right? They'll send something back to you.
They will.
And ask you to fix it.
And after you get over being mad about it, after I got over being mad about it, I rewrote the last little bit, and it turned out to be a pretty good poem. And he says, okay, he'll publish it. And
great.
I did what every writer does. I waited until he would publish it.
Mm-hmm.
And I waited, and I waited.
With bated breath.
Yeah, and 2 years later, I went back to my next writer's conference, having not done too much writing or submissions, which is what you're never supposed to do, by the way. You're supposed to keep writing, keep submitting.
Were you not submitting because you were waiting for that poem to appear?
Exactly.
You put your life on hold.
Yes.
Yes, I do that all the time.
Right. And so then I wrote him a letter at the second writer's conference since then. And I says, it's been 2 years since I've sent in my poem, and I'd like to have it back to send it to somebody else who might want to publish it. And he wrote me a letter back and said, well, it's too late. It's going in the next issue.
Oh, for goodness sake.
That's how I...
Oh, my goodness.
My first writer's conference publishing experience.
Yeah, but that's a good lesson there. You have to be patient. You also can't take it personally if they ask you to fix something.
Yeah.
It is your work, and you don't have to fix it if you don't want to. But again, if you want it to be published, you need to work with them and be flexible. But then also go back to the patience part, because it's not going to happen right away necessarily.
Okay. Do you want to hear the poem?
Yeah, I do.
All right. It's called A Gull's Lone Cry. While roaming by the rock-torn shores of sea, of lake, or river, soars the gull's lone cry, hungry for fish to echo pain and lonely wish. Their pungent odor of seaweed and dying mackerel bodies bleed. In remembrance there I rove for sport of sea and comely cove. Lord, cast your net about my heart and draw me to your side apart, a longing soul in cove secure, mid crashing waves, a haven sure.
That's very nice.
After losing my father.
Ah.
Yeah, I wrote that about 1967.
So what changes do you make? Did you remember? You remember what changes you made for him?
The last verse.
Read it again.
Where it said, Lord, cast your net about my heart and draw me to your side apart.
Uh-huh.
A longing soul in cove secure. That line was not there before. Because it had to fit where it was.
Yeah.
And mid crashing waves, a haven, sure.
Oh.
And that made it, that completed the image of the poem, kept within the image.
Uh-huh.
I think before, I don't remember what it was before, but I think I had gotten away from the image of the shore. I needed to come back to that.
So maybe it's a good thing he asked you to do something more with it.
It was a good
thing.
Yeah. Because a lot of poetry needs work. There's several states... Two or three stages of poetry. The first, you write the poem and you're in passion and you know it, and you want to, you just fall in love with your words and your poem, and that everything is perfect, and you want to send it to your mother, and your mother says, oh, that's nice, you wrote a poem, good. And you get all these good feedback, you know, and then there's a stage, and that's about the wrong time to send it out, because that's the first thing you want to do. Oh, it's a great poem. Everybody loves it. First time read, right?
Yeah.
And then you send it out, and it comes back, and you go, what did I do wrong here? And then you wait a while. You stick it in a drawer. You think, oh, well, it's nothing. And about maybe a month or so later, or 3 weeks or 2 weeks, you pull it out again,
uh-huh.
and you say, wait a minute. I've got to fix this thing. It's my child, but I have the right to discipline it any way I want, and I'm going to fix this thing.
Yeah.
And so you you discipline your work like you would discipline your child, not nastily, but in a very gentle, you know, shaping way,
uh-huh.
like you would shape character, you shape your poem. And so then you give it a chance to be read at a poetry reading, and you get the audience reaction. And if they laugh or you think they should laugh, or they you see them wiping their eyes at the end because it made them cry, you hit home.
Yeah.
That's the time to say, wow, this might just be the right poem for somewhere. And then you, what you do is you begin to look for magazines and article, newspapers or magazines mostly, that would take this kind of poem. And if you have several others to go with it, maybe you would send in 3 to 5 poems that would match a similar theme, but it would have progression and development and depth and all the good techniques that poetry has. And you send it in with a self-addressed stamped envelope into. Now, nowadays we do it by email.
Mm.
But you, the old days, and you can still do it this way today, is you... you know, trifold your little self-addressed stamped envelope around your submission in a number 10 envelope, and you send it off, maybe the 3 to 5 poems, off to a publisher, and that takes those, that style of poems or that theme that they're looking for,
mm-hmm.
And maybe they'll accept one and send 4 back. So what do you do with those? Well, you've already been writing more poetry, and some are similar themes and some are not. So maybe you shuffle around and find another publishing. The first time you do this, you need to find about 5 publishers. Because mm. then what you do is you put those publishers' names, addresses, and information on a one of those address labels.
Yes.
And you just put them on your computer. You just roll it in and you type up the addresses. The next time comes around for you to send these out, you just pull off the next address label, readjust the poems to fit their style and the number of poems they'll accept mm. and the length of poems they'll accept, slap on your address labels with your self-addressed staffed envelope, send them out again.
Wow.
So you've already done your work by finding the 5 markets to start with. And you keep your poems rotating in the mail. The trick is to keep track of what you did.
Yeah. Yes, you would have to, because evidently they can take a long time to decide when or whether to publish.
And you need to talk about rights here, I think, because you're sending out first North American serial rights. That's your first rights publication.
Uh-huh.
All right. You're not sending out book rights unless you're sending it to someone who will do a collection that is marketable like Manza Media does. But if you're just sending it to a magazine, it's first rights. If this poem has been published before, you can send it out under reprint rights. And if it's the second time you're submitting it out, you can submit it out under second rights, or you could say one-time rights, which means they have the right to publish it one time. And they don't keep it and keep republishing it forever. Some magazines, like Highlights, will take all rights to your poem, which means you never see it again and they can republish it as much as you want. Hmm. And usually they pay a pretty low fee for their magazine. But, you know, you got published, so you have to decide what you want to do with that poem and how long you want to keep it.
Mm-hmm.
But that's the kind of thing you need to know about publishing poetry, is how to keep it out there. And one of the best ways to get out there in the first place is just to meet the editors. And one of the best places to meet editors is writers' conferences.
Okay. Can you recommend some good writers' conferences to attend?
Well, I know some good Christian ones. If you want the Cadillac of Christian writers' conferences on the West Coast is Mount Hermon Christian Writers Conference. And it's you can find it on the Internet. Just type in Mount Hermon Christian Writers Conference. And
that's down near Santa Cruz?
It's down near Santa Cruz.
Yeah.
It's a beautiful conference ground.
Oh, yeah.
They have editors who are looking for works that they want to publish. Plus, you have people who will help you if you need editing or critiquing, will help frame your poem or whatever kind of writing you're doing.
Mm.
So you can get critiquing work there from professionals. And you meet lots of people there that are doing the same thing you are. And so it's really, you make friends. And that's important, I think.
Oh, yeah, friends and connections and people who write. It's wonderful to build a network of fellow writers.
It is.
Yeah.
Because one of the things
she
you
just
can do at a writer's conference is meet an editor that you would never think you might work with. And I write poetry, and my friend Judith Pella writes novels. But she came up to me one day at a conference that was on the West Coast, and she was writing this book called The Warrior Song, and she had this American Indian type character that was writing a song, and the song matched the story of his life. And she says, you know, I could just prose it, but it would be so much better if it was a real poem. And she says, I can't write poetry. And I said, well, yeah, I could. She said, would you help me write this song? Oh, what a gift. And of course, I said, sure. Well, this is one of those write in the car type things. I was in the car thinking of the information that she had already sent me. And I was thinking of the poem that had to go with it, and all of a sudden it came through my head again. And so I had to pull off the road and start writing the verses. And
you should carry a tape recorder.
I really should. So that got published by Bethany Book Publishers,
uh-huh.
And it's called The Warrior Song, and the poem and the lyrics poem as well as the music was printed in the book. At the head of the front of the book.
Would you read the lyrics for that song?
Okay. My warrior song, born on the wind, blows from the empty, pale blue sky. It's chanting moan that has no end, where eagles sweeps teardrops from my heaven-turned eyes. White eagles soar on broken wings for peace and glory long since gone. He leaves a lonely, shattered dream and hopes to sing his song at dawn. And then there's three more verses. Do you want to hear? Want me to keep going?
Sure.
Okay. I sing of hands like silky pearls touching my rough and darkened skin, of sunlight catching light brown curls, eyes that see my thoughts within. Oh, prairie winds, make our hearts blend and smother all our doubt and fear. If you should go, my lovely friend, I'd lose the world that I hold dear. I sing of winding, haunting trails where snow-capped mountains touch the stars, through days of fasting, nights of prayer, to lift my spirit, fill my heart. Come, Father, heal my broken song, wrapped in your arms where I belong. Dance in my soul to sweet release. Your arrows point the way to peace. O God, you shared my guilt and pain, caught in two worlds that tore my soul. You taught my heart to love again, and then forgiveness made me whole. Show me the pathway through the sky with healing wind beneath my wings. You heard this wounded eagle's cry and gave the song my spirit sings.
How beautiful. Warrior Song by Daniela Camara. We'll be back in just a moment. Welcome back to Manzanita Voices. This is Linda Field, and my guest today is Daniela Camara. Before we get back with Daniela, I want to remind you one more time about sending me your morning workout material, poems or short fiction, anything up to 2 minutes or so that I can read on the air, so you get to hear your work on the air. Send it to me at linda@manzamedia.com. That's my email address. And then go to the website for my blog, for archive shows, and other information. I'm trying to add to it all the time. So check back with my website at least every 2 weeks or so, and hopefully you'll find something new each time. Okay, back to Daniela. We are going to be talking this time about her chapbooks.
And how to publish your first book.
And how to publish your first book. Okay, you've got lots of information, so let's go.
All right. Well, my first poetry book was poetry reading at the Panama Hotel. and it's published by Joy Publishing. $6.95 is the original price on this when we first had it put it out. It was Joy Publishing. The editor loved my poetry. He had heard me at readings at Mount Hermon's writers conferences, and I had acquired him as a friend over the many years that I had gone until between 81 and 1990. And I had been doing poetry readings for about since 87. And I had acquired a good bunch of poems that were all dramatic type readings that, you know, you would just enjoy because of the drama of the poem. And the poetry readings actually forced me to write more dramatic reading type poems. And so the editor said, well, I want you to self-publish your first book.
Uh-huh.
And I kind of
Did you fall on the floor?
Out. And because he wanted to know who would buy it. And so I did one of these books that the poems were on the full page. It was 8.5 by 11,
mm-hmm.
and with a spiral binding, and I had a little cover that and I had gone down to the Panama Hotel where I first heard had gone to a poetry reading, and it was my first experience with reading poetry to an audience.
Which Panama Hotel is this?
This is in San Rafael.
In San Rafael,
yeah.
Okay.
It's a well-known
Not in
restaurant
Panama.
Now. Yeah, but then it was just a place where people gathered, and I went down there and sketched the Panama Hotel.
Yeah. You're an artist too. Yes, you.
So the picture of the Panama Hotel.
Wonderful.
I used as the cover of my book.
Uh-huh.
And then and it was 8.5 by 7, so there wasn't anything fancy about this. But I went around thrilled, telling everybody I published my first book.
Mm-hmm.
The other thing I did is I sent two copies into the copyright office. I'm sorry, and under the TX form that you can get on the internet. And it's a form for text. You cannot copyright a poem individually, but you can copyright a collection of poems.
Oh.
And so they want two copies, and you send it in with a form, and they send it back to you stamped officially, and my poetry books are now part of the Library of Congress.
Mm-hmm.
And they also guarantee that I own the copyright of the poems. Well, the next thing that happened was the next year I said, guess who buys my poems? He says, who? I said, poets, writers, and teachers.
Uh-huh.
And aside from friends and relatives, they were the first ones that bought my book. But he said, well, okay, then let's do a poetry book. And so he did one that was like 6 by 9, I guess that's what this is.
6 inches by 9.
Yeah,
uh-huh,
6 by 9.
Uh-huh.
And he used all the poems that I used, and I had an introductory foreword,
mm-hmm.
that I introduced the book, because it is a poetic reading collection. I had a bibliography in the back because a lot of it's historical, and I did some research.
Oh, I see Civil War there.
Yes,
interesting.
I had a Civil War trilogy in here.
Oh.
I also had some things to do with the Revolutionary War.
Hmm.
I had three poems about artists that Pizarro is one, and Van Gogh, I had two poems on him.
Yeah.
And three Christian poems that are... and three Irish poems. I did three poems here that had to do with poetry reading events that were unique, and also some drama in here too.
Mm-hmm.
So it's like a two-person poem that was based on Beartooth Mountain Road, which is a switchback road on the other side of this Wyoming that goes up north toward Montana.
Beartooth Mountain. It sounds like very Wyoming in Montana.
It was.
Yes, yes.
It was. Well,
is your book still available anywhere? Can people get it now? That was quite a while ago.
They can get it from me right now. It sold, actually. I saw somebody resell a used copy on Amazon.com for $20.
No kidding.
So for me, you can get it for $7.
Hey, great. Well, how do they contact you, Danella?
I have an email address, D-E-N-E-L-L-A-K at MLODE.com.
Okay, MLODE, like mother load.
Yeah, that's what it's
Gold
for,
country.
Yeah.
Yeah.
You know, I'll send you a copy.
Okay, so that's Danella K at MLODE.com.
Right.
Great.
Yeah.
Hope you get some sales.
And yeah.
Because it sounds like those are interesting. I'd love to, maybe I'll get it because I'd like to have, read the Civil War poems.
Yeah. Well, I really have, it's a 20-minute read, so that's, or 15 at the minimum, or the maximum, right, minimum.
Uh-huh.
Yeah, so, which is not why I'm not going to try to read that here, but if you want to hear one from this book,
that's fine.
It's, they're the Irish poem.
Yeah, the Irish one, I want to hear, the Blarney Stone, I want to hear that.
Oh, when I was substituting and teaching school at different times, I would bring this in to the kids from, whichever kids group I was teaching at, on St. Patrick's Day, and this would be the poem I'd read to them. So it goes, the Blarney Stone, right?
Yes.
Said Timothy Dooley, I'm doon on me luck. Me hens don't lay eggs, me chickens don't cluck. Me children are crying, me wife's horror struck, 'cause crazy McGurk wants me hide for to pluck. Said Paddy O'Rourke, I'd not moan and groan, which are needin' this minute's a wee Blarney Stone. See this Blarney Stone? 'Tis me best good luck charm. But ye must have your own now, or you'll come to harm. So Paddy told Timmy, wait for the full moon, then search Gavin Creek while whistling a tune. Seek then at midnight till you've found just the one that feels soft and smooth on the pad of your thumb. So it happened, the full moon's the very next night. Dark shadows and noises made Tim jump with fright. Then into the creek Timmy splashed in his shoes and felt on the bottom for a stone he could use. He whistled his tune and he found just the one. It felt soft and smooth on the pad of his thumb. He leaped in the air and he shouted with glee, then turned around thrice and said, 1, 2, and 3. Now crazy McGurk at the stroke of midnight just reached Gavin Bridge when he witnessed this sight. There's Dooley, the man he had promised to fight, a splashing and dancing for all of his might. And fear clutched his throat as he heard Dooley say, McGurk won't touch me, for I've luck on this day. Then, fearing the devil, he ran for his life, and Timothy Dooley went home to his wife.
I bet the kids love that.
Yeah. Well, kids of all ages, because it's always the one I like to present around St. Patrick's.
That is a good one.
It is, and it's fun, and I ham it up a bit, as you notice.
Yeah, brings out the Irish in you.
It does.
Yeah,
it does. My family is very Irish. So, publishing a chapbook, you think, oh, well, the publisher is going to market it for you, right?
Wrong. By the way, a chapbook is a small book. It's like
small
the
book.
Size of a chapter.
Yeah. About. Poetry Reading at the Panama Hotel is a legitimate book. It's over 50 pages, 64. But chapbooks are under 50 pages, and they're about the length of a chapter of a book. And so maybe you do it multiples of four. The smallest would be 12, 6, or 16, and then we go up to 24, 32, and
multiple pages of four.
And you can do them on your computer. I learned.
Wow.
This was all a learning process with me. But my first book, there was a magazine that went along with this, and the editor published the information about this poetry book having been published by Joy Publishing in one issue of the magazine. And he expected massive orders to come in so that he could, you know, sell books.
Mm-hmm.
And it didn't happen. And so then he got it in his head, well, poetry doesn't sell, which is not true. Poetry does sell. And this is the secret of poetry sales.
Okay, listen, you poets, come on.
Poetry Reading at the Panama Hotel was developed through poetry readings. Every reading I've been to in which there has been a featured reader, as in some that have not only featured readers but an open reading, they're allowed to bring their books to sell at the reading. And That is the biggest way they sell. Valona Deli has a poetry reading that is on one of the Sundays, and I forget which one, but it's in Crockett, California.
Oh, yes, Crockett, yeah. Right near Carquinez Straits.
Right, and so it's a good place to bring your books and read your poetry, and then if you have a little collection of books that you can set on the piano,
mm-hmm.
People will say, well, where can I get that poem? And you can sell it at your reading.
And so the chapbooks are very reasonably priced, so people are more likely to buy something, a chapbook, because it's not going to hurt their pocketbook. And
that's
it's
right.
Going to help your pocketbook, because you'll probably sell multiple copies.
That's right. Chapbooks, basically, if you have a cover stock to make your cover from, and then you have inside pages that are either 24 bond or a heavier bond, 28 bond,
uh-huh.
Then the print doesn't bleed through, and so when you do it, you need to make sure that your inside pages are heavier than regular 20-pound bond.
Uh-huh.
The other thing is, take the time to make a cover page as well as a cover to the book, in which you have your title in the top third of the cover page on the inside, and then at the bottom you have the name of your press, and mine is Peace Rose Press now, and the name of your city, Columbia, California, is where I live.
Uh-huh.
And then on the inside, you backside of that, page two, would be your acknowledgments, where the poems have been published before, and at the bottom, your copyright information. And then the next page is going to be your table of contents. Your next back of that page, page four, would be your dedication. Then you start your poem on the next right-hand page. And that way, your poetry will flow and it will feel like a real book.
Mm-hmm.
And then in the back, save a page, the very back page, for either, well, for notes and references, you need to have that in case you have copied someone. In other words, you've taken your information from another source. You want to make sure you source that material.
Mm-hmm.
And then use the last page and put a nice picture of you on there, and a little statement about the author that tells your reader who you are. On your very back page, your front page, as your front cover, and then
cover.
You have a back cover.
Uh-huh.
On the back cover, upper left-hand side, you're going to put poetry / and the kind of poetry it is. That some of these books are inspirational, others are historical. So it tells you, I put a poem on the back, and how you can get the book. And
uh-huh.
That tells you, it would sell between $3 and $5.
Between $3 and $5, that's great. Well, gee, I wish we had more time, because you've got more material here. I think you need to lead a workshop for someone somewhere, because you have so much information.
Thank you. I do teach a lot of workshops.
She does teach workshops, yes, and I think I might sign up for one. So how can people hear about your workshops? Do you have a website, Danella?
No, I don't. I
you
have
don't.
An email address, which we just did.
We just did. Well, let's do that again.
Okay. It's Danella K, DenellaK, at MLODE, uh-huh. com.
Okay.
And that's where you can get to me.
Great.
Okay?
Yes, wonderful. I'm sorry to cut this off, but we do have to go. But maybe we'll have you back again someday, and you can tell us about other facets of your writing career and your writing experiences, because you have a ton of them.
Thank
you so much for being our guest today.
And thank you for having me.
Thanks for listening. This is Manzanita Voices. Come back and see us next week.
You've been listening to Manzanita Voices, a production of the Manzanita Writers Press, an affiliate of the Calaveras County Arts Council.